Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, joined today by Bruce Andriatz, suburban editor of the Buffalo News. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Well, the SPCA in Niagara County is under fire for allegations that the agency euthanized too many healthy animals. Give us the backdrop of what's happening here, because whenever animals are involved, it becomes very, very passionate.
Yeah, I wish I could. I wish I knew more about the backstory that's happening. The story just kind of, I wouldn't say exploded, but just sort of appeared in the past couple of weeks with these accusations that animals were being euthanized. And it's been interesting, although not unexpected, to see the reaction from the public. That people are very upset to hear that this is happening. There's not a lot of tangible proof at this point. We're in the stage where it's being investigated. They're trying to get to the bottom of it. I think at this point, all we know for sure is that people are concerned that their donations, their money, in some cases with volunteers, their time is being devoted to an agency they believed in, and they don't want to believe that this kind of thing has been going on. What has also happened, it's been interesting, is some of the more heavy hitters in the community have become involved in it. Paul Cambria, the noted defense attorney, is involved. And of course, the SPCA of Erie County and Barbara Carr are involved in investigating what's happening. Right now, we just don't know what's going on. What's been interesting, though, is had a story in Sunday's paper about it, is the idea that people are going to Wheatfield, to the town board there, to complain about it, when in reality, it seems like that anger in that case is misdirected. I'm not sure that anybody who's an elected official in Wheatfield has anything to do with this beyond what an elected official in any town that donates money to the SPCA. So I think people are right now looking for the reasons this happened and are angry about it, but don't really know much more at this point.
Is it appropriate for one SPCA to investigate another?
That's a good question. You know, on the one hand, who knows more about what happens at an SPCA than the executive director of another? But I think it's fair to also say that somebody in that position might tend to have more empathy and might tend to see things more, I wouldn't say turn a blind eye to what's happening, but might tend to see the other SPCA's point of view a little bit more. But I'm not sure if there's the willingness, the political will certainly, to spend money for an independent investigation to see what's going on. Right now, this seems like a fair alternative.
And it's interesting to read that the president of the Erie County SPCA is an executive at Entercom, and the board chair of the Niagara County SPCA is a disc jockey, part-time disc jockey, at one of the stations in the Entercom system. And some are looking at that and seeing conflict. I don't necessarily see it.
Yeah, we live in a, from a political standpoint, a very incestuous community. You scratch one politician and you see their connection to dozens of organizations. And in Niagara County, the person you're referring to is part of a well-known family that is connected to a lot of different things and is involved in a lot of organizations. So I think the more you look, the more you'll see connections among those things. But right now, and we've talked about this at the news several times, the investigations of conflicts of interest, there are plenty of them. But at this point, I think they fall under the category of this could appear to be improper. Right now, we haven't found anything that suggests that there's some sort of collusion going on.
Let's move on to an issue you addressed in your column last week, and that would be the issue of school funding in the coming year in light of the property tax cap. We read last week that the Williamsville schools going to be cutting, but they left four areas that can't be touched. Interesting how they're taking that approach.
Yeah, and as I said in the column, that has become an annual event that the kind of community-wide wringing of hands over what's happening with school districts and school funding. And it's also interesting to note that this process of beginning the school budget is starting earlier and earlier every year. Excuse me. I think it's an acknowledgement that they know the problems are here. It's not that they're coming. They're here. They look at the numbers that anybody could look at and see we're going to have to make some dramatic changes. In Williamsville, the new school superintendent decided to say, here's what we're dealing with. Tell me the areas that you don't want to have touched. And, of course, you're inviting, which happened, you're inviting every member of the public who's got a special interest in something to come out and say, well, you can't touch elementary school librarians and you can't touch foreign language in sixth and seventh grade. And everybody will find a reason to not cut something. Williamsville at this point has found four areas that they say, okay, this year we won't touch. That's the easy part. The hard part is coming. What are they going to touch? What is going to get cut? And in a district like Williamsville, as I pointed out, known for being having an incredibly high academic reputation, a very affluent community, it actually becomes more difficult because people there live in Williamsville, live in that district because of the education their kids get.
And if Williamsville is having difficulties, what does that say about every other school district in New York State?
Yeah, and that's the point, is this is not something that, well, we don't have to worry, we live in X. Every school district is going to be dealing with this problem. You know, it's interesting that in Williamsville, one of the areas they've decided they will not touch is full-day kindergarten. Meanwhile, 15 miles south of there, East Aurora, just last year, decided they're going to add full-day kindergarten because they decided it's something they needed. So we see that in that situation, a district is probably going to have to figure out something else to cut because they've added. And there's been so many things added in recent years. When girls varsity hockey was added, this was the worry. We're going to add it, but we know that there's not a lot more money coming in. What are we going to do? It's going to be a very, very painful winter and spring for school districts, I think.
Is it? Do you find it troubling that two districts that you mentioned in your column, Pavilion and Wyoming, had an opportunity to combine, which obviously would alleviate some of the problems because it eliminates the duplication in administrative posts, and that was shot down? If taxpayers want to save money, why don't they see that and make the decision that in the long run would possibly work best for them?
I've watched these processes unfold many times over the years, and it is the rare two school districts that will agree to do this, even with millions of dollars of financial incentives, even as you said, with the obvious chance to eliminate duplication of services. Most people will, either from one side or the other, vote against it. And I always say it's easy for me or you or anybody to sit back and say, what's wrong with those people? Why wouldn't they do that? But living in those communities, especially in smaller communities, which is where this vote tends to take place, people identify so strongly with their school district. And as much as in New York State in particular, we want to do something to save money, when it comes right down to it and you say to a person, we want you to give up a small part of your identity, obviously, in most cases, people are reluctant to do it and will say no. Now, people in Pavilion, the larger school district, were okay with it. But as often happens, the people in the smaller district who really are clinging to an identity said, we're not going to do it. And it is from an outsider's perspective, it's frustrating because we all say this is what we want. We all want to eliminate these duplications. But when we have a chance to vote on it, we say no. It happened, as I often pointed out, with Kevin Gaughan and his initiative mm-hmm. to eliminate villages. Here was a real chance. We saw what happened. People adamantly were opposed mm-hmm. to that. And I think until people decide which is the lesser, that having this duplication is the greater of the two evils, it's always going to be this way.
One other topic we want to touch on this week, and that's the $1 billion Governor Cuomo is talking about allocating for the Buffalo area to attract new businesses here. Much attention has been placed on the city itself. Some talk about Niagara County, where a lot of businesses are locating because of the access to the low-cost power. But what about the suburbs of Buffalo? I haven't read any talk there. Are they looking at this as a possible way of boosting their economies?
It's interesting that when the governor made his announcement, one of the first things that people questioned was, well, is he talking about Buffalo, as in the city of Buffalo? He must mean all of Western New York. And, I mean, the State of the State address hadn't been over a minute, and politicians were already saying, well, no, he meant all of Western New York. And certainly that applies to the suburbs as well. I think the governor has made clear that he feels like Buffalo, to some extent, the city of Buffalo, has been abandoned by New York State in the past couple of generations. And he wants to address the city of Buffalo. He's also made it clear that anybody who has a chance to add jobs in Western New York and bring business here should be considered for that. And I'll just say that having heard this and read the story since then, I think the fight over this $1 billion is going to be legendary. I think that we already know how many little fiefdoms we have in Western New York. Everybody's going to want a piece of this money. Everybody's going to claim that they deserve it more than somebody else. And it'll be interesting to see how the process plays out. The governor on purpose, did not come up with a plan for how this was going to happen. He wants the localities to do that. And I think it's going to be, I hope ultimately it's going to be a good thing, but at the start, it's going to be a painful process.
Before we wrap up, we record on Friday morning, and as we speak, we're getting battered for the first time this year. Right. Where do you stand, Bruce? Are you the kind of guy who likes a little snow in the winter, or were you happy with the way things were with a snowless December and early January?
I will go on record as being anti-weather. I always have. But no, it's strange that obviously that here we are in mid-January and we're just for the first time feeling the effects of a storm. I've always been a believer that give me all the snow before Christmas. I love a white Christmas, and after that, I can take it or leave it. But as a lifelong resident of this area, there is something reassuring also about having that first snowfall and being reminded of not today with all the wind and how bad the driving is, but the beauty of winter in Western New York.
All right, Bruce Andreatz, suburban editor of the Buffalo News. Thank you for joining us on Press Pass.
Thanks for having me, Mark.